This is the Rich Eisen Show.
Hey, everybody.
Can't get enough of the Rich Eisen Show? You're in luck. You can find us everywhere. Watch us weekdays on Disney Plus from noon to 3 Eastern. Miss the show? We've got a podcast so you can listen anytime. But here's the best part. Our YouTube channel. Subscribe at youtube.com/Rich Eisen Show and you'll never miss a moment. Now, on with the show.
You're out!
There's confusion on the field. Sal Frelick took away a grand slam.
The Rich Eisen Show with guest host Tom Pelissero. Earlier on the show, three-time Super Bowl champion Mark Schlereth. 10-year NFL veteran defensive tackle Malik Jackson. Coming up, writer and director Ron Shelton. ESPN NFL analyst Chase Daniel. And now, sitting in for Rich, it's Tom Pelissero.
Welcome back to the Rich Eisen Show, everybody. Disney Plus, ESPN, the app, and ESPN Radio, presented by Progressive Insurance. This man's been on the show multiple times before. As you can see, there's the Durham Bulls cap signed by Kevin Costner and this man who wrote and directed it and is the inspiration for Bull Durham. Ladies and gentlemen, here to promote for the first time Bull Durham the musical.
Oh,
Ron Shelton.
Hey, what's up?
Well, I'm not going to sing and dance for you.
But I've known you for a long time. It's a pleasure to be able to say that. And you have been, to use the Goodfellas phrase, cultivating this caper for quite some time, right? The Bull Durham the musical, and it's finally now happening, Ron?
Yeah, it's had a longer development, you know, than normal, although all musicals take forever.
Mm-hmm.
I'm learning why, because you can only rehearse them every 6 months, really,
mm-hmm.
because you have to pay 40 people to come in and sing and dance, and then you spend the next 6 months fixing it, and then you bring them back. So, we were fully financed about 7 years ago, ready to go, a theater, and two tragedies happened. One was our principal financing producer, who has 7 Tonys, and was a minority owner of the Cincinnati Reds. He was the perfect guy.
Mm-hmm.
Had a heart attack and died. And then we put him, as we've tried to replace him, who was irreplaceable, the pandemic hit. And everything shut down. We had to give all the money back to the investors and start all over. And here we are.
And here we are. And it's finally starting to run through Sunday, November 2nd at the Paper Mill Playhouse in Millburn, New Jersey. And then, so this is now, this is off-Broadway, to say the least. But, I mean, the idea would be for this to catch a little bit of fire and go?
Well, catch a lot of fire is the goal. I mean, we've mm-hmm. got Tony winners everywhere and Tony nominees everywhere, you know, and the director and the cast and the choreographer and... I mean, it's a big time show, and the Millburn, you know, if AAA in baseball is a phone call away, this is like 4A.
I love it.
I mean,
sure.
It is, people use it for shows right off of Broadway after they've closed or as the jumping off for Broadway, and that's mm-hmm. where we hope we are.
That's where you hope you are. And okay, let's just jump into it. So, which scenes from the film are now set to music that we would be interested in?
Well, there's a lot of lines from the script that turn into songs. Mm-hmm. I mean, you may remember when thick-headed Nuke LaLoosh is being tutored by Annie in one way and Crash by another. It finally dawns on him. He says, you know, I figured it out. Winning is better than losing. And winning is better than losing is a huge show-stopping number. With bats flying, and it's pretty great. Another time, you know, there's another line, every woman deserves to wear white. That's the big woman empowerment number.
Yes.
There's a few scenes that, there's some earthy language, maybe not quite as earthy as the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no bathtub scene, sorry, folks.
But,
you know.
Is lollygag in the ball?
Oh, there's lollygag. We lollygag. We fight. We curse. It's a very spirited, very physical, highly entertaining, and we think funny show, and so do audiences. So I think everybody could use a laugh right now, and this appeals across the board, like the movie did. You know, you didn't know if that movie was it polarized. No, this brings us all together.
Sure. And two-time Tony nominee Carmen Cusack is Annie Savoy in this.
Fantastic.
Right.
Fantastic.
And Nick Walker is Crash Davis.
Yeah, he was in Hamilton. He's now the lead in the Phantom reboot. In fact, he's going from rehearsal to the lead in Crash Davis and Phantom every day. But he's now, now he's done with Phantom. But yeah, we have a discovery for Nuke and just, I don't know. I really, you know, we ran it a few years ago in Atlanta. This is a much, much further advanced version with a new director and a new cast. But it was and we brought, the Atlanta Braves came to see it. And the Gwinnett Braves, the AAA team was right there.
Sure.
And the manager of Gwinnett was Snitker, who was, before he got his shot in the big leagues.
Right.
And so he and the coaches said, this is the first musical we've ever been to that we like as much as our wife. Because, you know, the women drive the guys to the musical and you go to serve your lady and you pretend you like it. Well, actually, I think this is for everybody.
Well, you've always had strong female leads in every single thing that you've done, Ron. Like that's sort of like your secret sauce is you write very strong female characters in otherwise one would think pop culture, iconic stuff that is for men, but not really. Like you kind of hide that thing really well. You have that hidden ball trick in everything that you do.
Well, it's
here,
not
Ron.
Very hidden, really.
I mean, right, I know.
I mean, Annie Savoy tells the story in Bull Durham.
Right.
I mean, who's the most successful person at the end of Wiping and Jump? Rosie Perez. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's Rene Russo's character, Dr. Molly. Mm-hmm. A shrink in West Texas. It's a tough gig. And she's the one that explains to Roy McAvoy, Kevin Costner, what you just went through because he can't figure it out. Mm-hmm. So, I think that, you know, the men become clearer if the women are stronger and vice versa.
Mm-hmm. Ron Shelton here on the Rich Eisen Show. So Bull Durham making it. Walk me through who is first attached to that when you first started coming up with the idea of Bull Durham and then getting it off the ground. Who was
first
attached?
I got Kevin. I got Kevin before people quite knew who he was, but we knew people were going to quickly find out. And while we were trying to get it financed, The Untouchables came out, and then No Way Out came out.
Mm-hmm.
And that greenlit the movie because
No Way Out greenlit Bull Durham.
Because the New York Times said Kevin Costner is a movie star, and 30 days later we were in pre-production. I mean, we shot it almost immediately.
No kidding.
Yeah, much quicker than today. You can't pull that stuff off today. It's too bureaucratic.
But casting Susan Sarandon, I know, was definitely a to-do. Correct? Like, she wasn't immediately greenlit for that.
Studio,
correct?
For some crazy reason, didn't approve of her. And then she flew on her own all the way from Italy with her two-year-old daughter, Eva, to audition at the Warner Brothers lot.
Right.
So her agent called, and I said, she's not approved. Well, she's going to be there tomorrow afternoon. I said, well, I'll meet her. And I brought Kevin in, and she was great. And then we called the studio and said, we like Susan, can you put her on the list? And the studio head, who's become a friend of mine, said, you know, she just came in the other day. I saw her and she looks great. Yeah, we'll approve her. Well, she didn't come in the other day. She went right from the audition to the hallway of the studio, looking like $1,000,000,000. Walked up and down the hallway schmoozing, and she found Mike, Metavoice, office. Mike, how are you? And then he called and said, hey, I saw her a few weeks ago. No, you saw her 5 minutes ago. and so that was a willful act by her, but she was great, obviously. But the first choice for Nuke was Charlie Sheen.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Who really is a good pitcher.
Right, I mean, we all remember him from Major League, but that was later. So Charlie Sheen was originally. Why? How did Tim Robbins get that gig then?
Well, Charlie, he turned it down. And he still talks about this because he was sort of committed to Eight Men Out. the Black Sox scandal.
That's a great movie. John Sayles directed movie.
The same studio was making that same summer. Nobody would make a baseball movie, and Orion made two at the same time. And
so it was the same studio that was making Bull Durham was making Eight Men Out.
At the same time.
About the Black Sox scandal.
Now, so Charlie could have got out of that because Nuke was a bigger part.
Yeah, right.
But he didn't. And now he's got his book out and his documentary out. And he's still, his wild ride continues.
But so Tim Robbins showed up on your radar screen how then?
No, he just came into an audition with 47 other people.
No kidding.
He was this big hulking guy and he had this sweet face and was awkward. And, you know, I knew he wouldn't pitch as well as Charlie, but he otherwise was the character and that's how he got it. But Charlie could have got it.
So then you got Costner was the guy to help you greenlight it because No Way Out was such a hit.
Yeah.
Susan Sarandon basically got herself the role by showing up and just being Susan Sarandon and looking like Susan Sarandon and acting like Susan Sarandon. And Tim Robbins gets the gig because Charlie Sheen didn't get out of Eight Men Out and he just showed up and you're like, that's Nuke.
Well, yeah, I didn't right away because he didn't tell me. He was lying, which... within industry standards, you know, he was lying.
Right.
And his agents were lying. They said, he's never been in a movie. He's a discovery, blah, 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 blah. Well, he'd been in the lead in Howard the Duck, which was the biggest bomb in the history of Hollywood.
Oh, my gosh.
But I didn't see it. Nobody saw it. Nobody knew he was in it. He was great, though. And he also was, you know, he's 6'5".
Right.
And most of the guys reading for Nuke looked like younger versions of Kevin. And if you're the woman, you're going to not choose the younger version of Kevin. You're going to choose the mature 35-year-old version of Kevin. So I wanted somebody who was very different than Kevin, and that was Tim.
What's your... I'll screw it. I know you're probably going to say it's tough to decide, but what's your favorite line of that movie? You're proud. Here we are all these years later. Like, that. I stuck the landing on that one based on my own experiences or anything like that, Ron.
Well... not counting the rose goes in the front, big guy. When Kevin is telling Tim, when Crash is telling Nuke, giving his last instructions before the big leagues, he says, you know, they're going to light you up. Don't worry about it. You're going to, you know, he says, this game is played with fear and arrogance. And of course, Nuke says fear and ignorance. So no, you know, but fear and arrogance is probably the closest to what I believe of any line I've ever written. Meaning, if we don't all acknowledge that we're afraid and don't know what we're doing, we're lying, or we're not honest. Mm-hmm. And you're not fully human if you aren't arrogant enough to say, look at me, I'm here, I'm going to do it. So it's the acknowledgement of both, I think, that makes greatness.
Did you realize that when you were playing? Like, when did that dawn on you, fear and arrogance? When did that hit you?
Well, I think if you're an athlete, you're making a living as an athlete.
Right.
You know right away that everybody you're competing against is the best in their high school, the best in their college, whatever.
Yes. Right.
And they're all playing with a bit of fear and a lot of arrogance. And that we're all equal that way. It's just some guys have better fastballs. And... but most baseball players, most athletes, maybe not in football, or well, maybe there's the handful of guys in any sport that can do things that nobody else could do.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody else could run like Barry Sanders can do the things that Mahomes can do or whatever.
Right. You know,
there's those guys.
Sure. Ohtani, another example.
Ohtani.
Right.
Or, you know, the lineman for the Rams, that just Aaron Donald,
right.
Those guys. Everybody else, there's a sort of similar, really better than almost anybody else, but it's these guys that succeed. It's the smarter versions that figure out how to apply the same 6'2", 240.
Right.
And the other guy who runs the same 60 time and has the same, you know, so it becomes a mental game at a certain place.
Well, isn't that, what's the line about golf? The most important 5 inches or whatever, something like that, or... are the ones between your temples, right?
Between the temples.
Yeah. You know what I mean? And obviously, we all know that from, obviously, Tin Cup's another example of that.
Yeah, there's
right?
I've got a movie in the spring about, based on a book that was written 40 years ago, It's about Ted Williams when he was 70 and he was the fly fishing king of Keys.
Yeah.
And a writer goes down to interview him without being invited. And Ted hated writers. And it's about these two guys. And I've got two great actors to play each one. Ted at 70 and the writer.
Mm-hmm.
And this this is the spring movie, we believe. And and I interview a lot of guys who knew Ted and played for Ted when he managed. We forgot he managed about 8 years after playing. And they said they were all at spring training and he was showing up and they were terrified of Ted Williams because of his reputation.
Sure.
Although he was not the guy. The book shows players loved him. Coaches loved him. Everybody loved him except the Boston press. And every player said, he said, "You guys are all in the big leagues for a reason. I'm not going to mess your stance. I'm not going to tell you how to hold the bat or where to stand. You figured that out to get here. All I'm going to talk about is this."
Mm-hmm.
The middle approach. And the team average went up 35 points that year.
Amazing.
And he was manager of the year. Just talking about this.
My first iteration with ESPN, you know, the 7 years that I was there, being the voice of Major League Baseball on ESPN Radio, and then SportsCenter would be sending me to the World Series, where I met Charlie Sheen, by the way, or the All-Star Game, where I was for Fenway Park, you know, in 1999 for the All-Century team. Kevin Costner was the one who introduced all the players, and they came out, and the current All-Stars lined up from home plate to third base, home plate to first base, and then the All-Century team lined up. I'm getting goosebumps just even remembering it, Ron, from first to second and second to third, and it was just this constellation of all-time greats, current and former, and then Ted Williams came out and threw the first pitch, if you remember.
Right. Yeah.
And McGuire and told me, because he went up to Ted Williams, and they had a conversation, and I asked McGuire, "What did Ted Williams say to you?" And he said, Williams asked him that when you hit one right on the screws, do you smell the wood burning from your bat? Is what he asked him. And McGuire says, "I told me I do. That the baseball, the horsehide, and the strings, when it hits the wood in a certain way, it would like light somewhat of some smoke." Yeah. Yeah. You know, and I'm like, this is just next level. Like that, that's not mortals talking.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
That's the beauty of baseball. That happened to me is when the club,
like this moment,
there was
right
a clubhouse
there.
Fire. That was what it hit. Oh, yeah. Yeah. It was it's a great moment. And Ted came out.
I'll never forget it.
It was like those guys were nothing. And Ted was the guy.
Right in the middle. I mean, and Gwynn and Griffey Jr. kind of held him up as he threw the pitch to Fisk. Yeah. I was right behind home plate. Clearly, I'm not going to approach this. You know, like I'm leaving these folks to themselves here. I will never forget it. I will never forget that night. It's truly one of the greatest nights of my entire life and career. Unbelievable, standing on that turf.
And he died 3 years later. Yep.
Before I let you go, what's your favorite sports movie, Ron? I've never asked you this. I've never asked you this when we were a couple fingers into a drink. Or in your previous appearances here, I can't believe it. But what is your favorite sports movie?
The Hustler.
You consider that a sports movie?
Yeah.
Okay. Then why? Why is it a sports movie? And then why?
It's competition.
Okay.
It is about everything that we're talking about in these other sports. The head game.
Okay.
It happened to star Paul Newman, Jackie Gleason, and George C. Scott, and I forgot the woman. She's all time great, a great director. Great, and I think it's about. It's so contemporary, even though it was made 60 years ago in the black and white movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's everything that sports is. Piper Laurie was fantastic. So that's my favorite one. I like other odd ones that nobody can remember. There were some great British ones, but I can't talk about sports movies because I started making them because I was so hypercritical of other ones that I don't want to come out like being a curmudgeon.
So do you consider Raging Bull a sports movie?
Yeah, it is a sports movie because it's about a guy. I mean, for me, Raging Bull is the best movie about a boring guy ever made because I don't think... I mean,
Jake LaMotta is boring to you, or
he is a boring guy. I mean, he beat his wife. He couldn't. He's brilliantly portrayed,
right?
And it's a very watchable movie.
Sure,
but LaMotta is LaMotta the subject of the movie? Maybe. Well, he is there.
Is Rocky a sports movie?
It's a fairy tale sports movie.
It's a fair, like a lot, like we've had Stallone and Carl Weathers, may he rest in peace, on, and they both thought a love story would be a way to describe it.
That's fair.
You know, but obviously it's about boxing, it's about sports.
Bull Durham's a love story. I mean, yeah, what other, well, there are a lot of great boxing movies.
Sure. I'm just trying to throw some other ones your way. Do you like Hoosiers?
Uh-oh. Yes and no. It was really well made. I admire it. Mm-hmm. It was, and Hackman was great.
Oh, and Hackman helped greenlight Bull Durham in a way, because he was in No Way Out, you know, with Costner.
Yeah, he was. And so with that scene in the back of the limo really helped, too.
True. Let's give Sean Young some credit, says Ron Shelton, everybody. Hey. Okay. All right. And did you like, so then just to bring it all full circle, did you like Color of Money? Which was the technical sequel to The Hustler.
It got Newman his Oscar finally, mm-hmm. which was not near. He should have got his Oscar for The Verdict.
Yeah.
Oh, what a great movie that is, Ron. Yeah. Ron, that is a great.
I agree.
Great movie. You know, Jack Warden is in that as well.
I just saw it again. It holds up.
Oh, yeah. It does. I did. I just saw it a couple of years ago too. Where he plays a drunk lawyer down and out, and he gets the case of his life. James Mason plays the opposing attorney.
I think
right.
I think Sidney Lumet directed it, and I think David Mamet wrote it.
Yes, Mamet.
Mamet wrote it.
Yeah, it's a great movie. That's my favorite Paul Newman movie. I mean,
but Color of Money is the Hustler sequel.
It was almost kind of a lifetime achievement Oscar.
Right.
He also is great in Cool Hand Luke, but Newman, but. And Cool Hand Luke is a really good movie, but you don't, you know, they don't give Oscars if it's funny, you notice. Tootsie was better than Gandhi.
That year, correct.
By far. Nobody watches Gandhi, Tootsie holds up.
I agree.
Yeah.
Tootsie's.
But they never come Oscar time, the funny people don't win.
Well, come Tony time, let's get it done. What do you think?
That's right.
Let's go.
It's down the road. We can see it from here.
Again, go ahead and find it. Papermill.org for tickets through November 2nd. The Bull Durham, the musical.
And they're selling, baby. By the way. The tickets are really
selling.
Let's
go. Let's go, man. Let's get it done, man. And because I've known you've been really wanting this to materialize, happen for years, and I couldn't be happier for you. And always love having you on here, man. You're the man.
Likewise.
That is Ron Shelton, everybody. Papermill.org to go see Bull Durham musical right here on The Rich Eisen Show.
The Rich Eisen Show podcast.
As many of you know, supporting pediatric cancer research is something I care deeply about. That's why I'm proud to share what Hyundai's doing through Hyundai Hope on Wheels. For over 27 years, with every Hyundai sold, they've helped fund pediatric cancer research. Alongside over 850 dealers, they've raised more than $277 million, helping over 25,000 kids and supporting more than 1,400 research grants at 175 institutions nationwide. This year alone, they've committed another $27 million in honor of the 27th anniversary of the program. And they're proud to have national youth ambassadors like Jackson Trin and Emmy Cole, who bring hope to kids across the country by sharing their stories. Because at Hyundai, hope is our greatest feature, and it comes standard. Visit HyundaiUSA.com and search Hyundai Hope on Wheels to learn more.
Back to the Rich Eisen Show, Disney Plus, the ESPN app, and ESPN presented by Progressive Insurance. Chase Daniels should be along joining us shortly here. I did not get the opportunity to flip over to baseball last night. Did catch, though, this morning, Chris, one of the stranger plays I can remember seeing, first 8-6-2 double play in MLB postseason history. The curious quote was the Dodgers manager saying after the game, like, oh, it was a brain fart running the bases. I don't know.
Well, no, not really. I think anyone.
That's what he called it, quote, brain fart.
I know,
to me,
but
I would have been equally as confused.
It was
on
one
the bases
of the most
as anyone else.
Bizarre plays, bases loaded, bomb to center field. Brewer's outfielder goes up. He's trying to make a catch at the wall. It goes off his glove, off the top of the wall. Then it comes back into play, and he catches it. And everyone's just kind of standing around because I think the runners thought, oh, he caught it. Oh, it hit the wall. The wall's in play. It's, you know, it's a live ball. Throws it, shortstop, home, force out at home. The catcher runs all the way to third. Double play. It's one of the most bizarre, confusing, interesting plays whoever's ever see. It's got to be the only 8-6-2 two unassisted double play in Major League history.
There was apparently another one, a Sammy Sosa fly ball, but it was a tag out at the plate.
Oh, okay.
So someone wasn't exactly burning it up down the third baseline. Jeez. In that particular instance.
Yeah, this one I understand why all the runners were just kind of standing around confusing because it was bizarre to watch. It was bizarre when it happened live. And I was still talking about it hours later with my baseball friends. And man, but still, you know, Dodgers bullpen makes it interesting. Not sure why you took Blake Snell out of the game. Story of his career. He was cruising, but Dodgers able to get it. And then you go on the American League side. The Blue Jays, TJ, has been a wagon for months. And you
is
think,
TJ a Blue Jays fan?
No, but I know he's a baseball fan.
Okay, no, I thought you were throwing it at him.
He's seen Bull Durham.
I mean, he's a fan of just, he just threw darts at the wall. He's got the Cowboys. He's got the Sixers. I never know where we're falling.
Because there's a story behind all of them, you jerks.
I'm aware. I've heard the story.
Hey, don't call me a jerk. I wasn't going to bring that up.
Well, but at some point you would have, so.
No, I'm not. I'm above that now. They have just been beasting through everybody in the American League to run out the rest of the season. They looked kind of like on a World Series collision course with the Dodgers. And then Seattle, this team of destiny, takes both games on the road yesterday, hitting a bajillion home runs. Oh, man. Crazy. We're guaranteed a World Series matchup we've never had before, which I think is pretty awesome.
Kind of
goes back to a couple years ago, I've said before, when it was Diamondbacks Rangers, a matchup we've never seen before. I think it's fun. It's interesting. And, you know, I would expect Toronto to get back in it, higher register.
Oh,
but, man, oh, man.
Well, what would be your preferred World Series matchup, TJ?
The Mets against anybody.
Not,
I mean, right. One that's alive.
So the most able, the preferred option right. Of the ones left, currently the ones available to you.
You
the Mets, of course. How could I forget that the
you weren't specific enough? All right. Look, I live here. If I got and so the Dodgers, right? Even though Ohtani is, what is going on with Ohtani right now? Was he 1-for-20? His last 21 at bats, but of course, you know. I'm not an LA fan right when it comes to the Lakers, that's for sure. But when it comes to baseball, I'll put my fandom behind the Dodgers and for my grandpa.
So do I, TJ.
And hopefully they'll win.
So shut up, Dodgers, just to recap, Dodgers, Mets, Clippers,
I didn't say I was a Sixers. You asked me who I want, and then
Cowboys,
I gave it to you, and now you're going to put them on
no,
the bandwagon?
No, I'm just asking. Oh,
there we go. TJ, climb aboard the Dodgers.
Put the Dodgers up there.
You're poking the hornet's nest.
Yeah.
The kids still have pennants.
No, which is such a bummer.
Yeah.
I loved pennants growing up.
When's the last time you saw a pennant?
Oh, I have one over here somewhere.
In a store. I mean, in a store.
Oh.
Do they sell pennants?
That's a good question. I don't even know.
They got it, right?
Everyone I knew.
I bet you're Amazon. You can still. Let's check it out.
Growing up in the 80s, like
everybody had pennants.
Had pennants on the walls.
Yeah.
And I would think, Del Tufo.
I mean, I'm an old guy.
Breaking news, you're slightly older than me.
Yes.
But you were also in the pennant generation.
One of the biggest things I did as a kid is my brother had a Miami Dolphins pennant from their undefeated season, and I drew on it, which was like, I got in a lot
to
of trouble.
To get even with him?
Yeah. Something happened when we were kids.
What was it?
I don't know.
That's
what, but
bad.
I drew like a smiley face on it. Yeah, it didn't end well for me.
Yeah, you can definitely still go on Amazon.
Amazon's got a bunch of
pennants.
But I feel like you used to still be able to walk into a store and there would just be pennants. Like every gift shop in a hotel, they're all selling pennants.
You have to go to a sporting goods store. Here's a question, though. And you have it. Well, you have daughters, so I don't know what they have on their walls. But like, do kids still?
Posters.
Teenagers still put posters on the wall?
Yes, there's still posters.
Yeah.
Like, because remember when we were younger, man, oh,
that
was big. And we had some of the great posters,
great
like
posters.
The Bash Brothers and George Gervin with the Iceman.
Farrah Fawcett.
And, well, that too. I was speaking sports, but
Bo Jackson.
I had three Michael Jordan posters and eventually a Shaq poster.
Yeah.
Those were the four big ones in my room. The Timberwolves started playing when I was 8, and I lived in Minnesota, but like,
KG,
you weren't going to go and get a Gerald Glass poster, you know, like those were not necessarily available.
The Kelly Bundy poster.
So you grew up in Minneapolis?
I grew up in Minneapolis, outside Minneapolis. You died in Minnesota.
You remember when Doug West played for the Timberwolves?
Oh, yeah. I met Doug West in Jerry's grocery store one time and got his autograph on a newspaper.
Doug West, Altoona legend.
Doug West
like
was
my third cousin.
He was one of the early like star players. Number 5.
Yep.
He had the bowl haircut that
he
I thought was cool.
Original
wasn't going to look good on
right?
me, but I wanted that haircut.
Yeah, Doug, he was from like high school. He was like, when he was in, I know this is a quick story. In Altoona, when he was in high school, I was in like 4th grade, but I can remember the field house where they played high school was packed, like standing room mm-hmm. only when he was in high school. He was just... We had never, in our area, we had never seen anyone play basketball like him. And we had a guy go to the NBA before him. But Doug, he was special.
He was like
man.
A 6'5", 6'6", shooting guard.
Yeah.
He was like
Pops.
A very poor man's Michael Jordan.
Yeah.
But he was a good player. And if memory serves correctly, Brockman, you can double check me on this. I believe he was traded to the, at the time, Vancouver Grizzlies
yes.
in a deal for Anthony Peeler.
Yep,
he played ended up being
Peeler.
A part of a couple of Timberwolves.
1 or 2 seasons for
playoff teams.
Yeah.
Yes, I distinctly remember being like, that's Doug West, my favorite player. And I'm like 10 years old.
That's wild.
I'm like,
man.
I have nothing to get an autograph on. And so, whatever, my mom or dad, whoever was with me, bought a newspaper. And so somewhere I'm sure I still have a Doug West in pen on a newspaper that has all kinds of other words. You can't even tell. There's just like, it looks like Del Tufo got angry at his brother and scribbled over a very important newspaper story.
By the way, you're right. Was traded for Anthony Peeler. Good job.
Wow.
There you go. All right. Chase Daniels is going to join us around the other side of this break. Stick around. Breaking down what we saw last night. What, if anything, is going on with Josh Allen? A lot more with Chase after this.
The Rich Eisen Show, the podcast.
Welcome back to the Rich Eisen Show. Tom Pelissero in for Rich on Disney Plus, the ESPN app, and of course, ESPN Radio, presented by Progressive Insurance. Progressive Commercial Insurance protects small businesses for affordable coverage options. Quote today at progressivecommercial.com. Our next guest spent a long time in the NFL, one of the best analysts you are going to find on social media and elsewhere. Also an analyst for ESPN, going to be calling games, I'm told, 7 nights a week now. They're actually having him do a different game every single night. Chase Daniel is with us. Chase, look at
let's
that.
Go.
Look at the
let's
welcome
go.
From the boys in studio right here. I'm not going to ask you to break down FIU, any Conference USA action today, but let's start out by something. I saw you posted on social media earlier today saying, I really don't get the discourse regarding Josh Allen. I now give you the floor.
Spicy.
You've got more than 280 characters on this show, sir. Tell me what it is you're seeing that people are getting wrong about Josh Allen, particularly last night when that wasn't anybody's best for Buffalo.
Yeah, look, I just think in general, Buffalo, the last two games have not been playing well. But here's my thing. Like, do we really think come January that Josh Allen, who is the MVP, and that room with James Cook and Joe Brady, who we praised all that, do we not think they're going to not be around? Like,
right.
I do. And so, like, just slow the roll. Like, the teams they lost, the Patriots, they're pretty freaking good. Okay, they're a good team. And this Atlanta team, they're starting to find their stride as well. Defensively, they just couldn't protect Josh Allen last night, like offense. And so when I'm watching people really on X and just in general on social media and some analysts, like, just slow the roll on Josh Allen. Like, he's an MVP for a reason. Now, I will say the interceptions have started creeping up, right? They're 4 in the last 3 games. But it's not like they're becoming one-dimensional. And I think that was sort of the issue a couple years ago before they went to Joe Brady, is they really were one-dimensional. I'm looking at these passing attempts in the 5 games or 6 games this year. There's only been once where he's thrown it over 31 times. And so they're not asking him to do a lot, but it's really hard when He needs some receivers to make plays for him, and they're not there. Yes, of course, he's forcing the football in some areas, but let's just calm down. They're still 4-2 the last time I checked, and they're still one of the better teams in the AFC. They just lost back-to-back games, and I think this discourse around Josh Allen is like, let's just remember who he is, and that's a top two or three quarterback in the league.
We also kind of get comfortable, and we get used to the idea that, hey, they're down by a bunch of points. They're going to score 40. In a game like that last night, the Bills' defense, especially in the first half, and it would have been even worse if Drake London doesn't step out at the one-yard line, but they didn't have answers for that Falcons offense. And I thought, you go way deeper into this than I do, Chase, but I thought for the people who might have gotten glimpses of Michael Penix Jr. in that Week 3 game at Carolina where they get shut out, and he is legitimately terrible in that game. Yep. We saw last week and then in this one as well. This seems like this is what you're hoping to find if you're the Falcons looking at Michael Penix Jr.
Absolutely. And you know what? It really helps when you have Bijan Robinson, and he is just a freak of nature. Like, you're going to look in November, and just the way he's playing right now, he's like a true outside zone runner, but he does these like jump cuts where it's just like, I'm watching the game and I'm listening to Dan Orlowski call it, and I'm like, man, Dan is all over it. But he just looks like the best running back in football, because he is the best running back in football. And he's not only doing it on the ground, but he's doing it in the air as well. And so when you have a run game that you're actually going to lean on, and you know, hey, if something's not open downfield, and we saw this last night and a couple other games, is just, hey, drop the ball off to your running back. He turns these 2-3 yard checkdowns into big plays, and that's what helps Michael Penix Jr. Obviously, Drake London, he's playing at an extremely high level too. And my offense coordinator Zach Robinson, like, he's doing a really good job. They're finally figuring out what their identity is, and it's early, right? And that's what we expect from a lot of different teams, is, hey, once you find your identity, then you build on what you're really good at, and maybe don't worry about your weaknesses and push them to the side. You might want to, you know, handle this. And they know what they are offensively, and it runs through Bijan Robinson, and it just helps Michael Penix, and you've seen him play a lot better because of that.
In the other game last night, you got to look at the top two picks in that same draft that Michael Penix Jr. was in 2024. Jaden Daniels, not his best night. He took responsibility for the fumble late. The conditions were weird. It was wet on the field. But I thought, even just from watching, again, you're breaking down tape, I'm not going back through like that, but Caleb's played on national TV a few times now. From what we saw in Week 1, where he started out playing on time and then everything was kind of the hero ball, off schedule, stretching. Last night was the most controlled I felt like I had seen from Caleb Williams. And it would appear, at least to me, that Ben Johnson's having a positive effect. What do you think?
You are absolutely right, because that, when I went back and rewatched it, I've actually watched it twice already this morning, because I just wanted to get a feel for offensively, one, how Ben Johnson's calling the game, and two, how Caleb Williams is reacting to stuff around him, because I think the Commanders did some things last night that maybe they weren't ready for. But the number one thing that I came around and I'm most impressed with was just Caleb Williams' patience. One, they only threw it 29 times. Okay, so that's where you want Caleb Williams to live, that 29 to 32 pass attempts a game. Because what I really thought the Bears did, and this is going to surprise some people in Chicago, but their offensive game plan when it comes to running the football last night was the best I've seen a Chicago Bears team run the football, from schematically outside zone, inside zone, power, hand the ball off to a receiver, Caleb Williams, touchdown run, how they set that up with the under center play action. So there was true balance, 27 rush attempts, 29 pass attempts. But what I think was so impressive was they also did, they made everything look the same. So not only are they throwing the football down the field, and sometimes, and he was late, right? He wasn't perfect. But he's also, Ben Johnson is also setting up this screen game for Caleb Williams to be balanced. And when you watch Caleb Williams last year, it was like, all right, you have areas of the game where you're throwing it 40 times in a row. And it's just like, because they were so bad. This is what type of coaching Caleb Williams needs. And you're starting to see him sort of come out of his shell and really just calm down, and he's not playing in a hurry. He's playing really patient. He's showing a good accuracy on short and intermediate areas. I mean, look, St. Brown, like number 14, when they were backed up, that could have been a 90-yard touchdown. The ball was dropped, and then you take into element or the elements into effect too. I thought he played really, really well.
Chase Daniel is our guest, ESPN analyst. You can find him all over social media as well. Speaking of coaching, you're in Nashville right now. You're welcome to confirm whether or not you've been brought in to try to help out with Cam Ward here. They make the first head coaching change of the season. This comes 3 weeks after they took away play calling duty from Brian Callahan. It's the worst thing that can be happening, I would think, around a young quarterback, which is just kind of this general chaos right now. If you're looking for two things you'd like to see Mike McCoy and Bo Hardery in this group do with Cam Ward from this point forward to get something out of the remaining two-thirds of his rookie season, what is it?
Well, they just have to figure out what he does best offensively. And you can't ask a rookie quarterback, I don't care who you are, if you're Joe Montana or Patrick Mahomes, you have to have balance, exactly what we talked about with Caleb Williams. I feel at times they're just dropping Cam Ward back, and I'm looking at the route concepts and the dropback concept that are surrounding him, and it just doesn't make sense to me. And I've played in a lot of different offenses, and they need to bring in what he did well in Miami, which is RPO type stuff. Their receivers have been really, really poor with dropping the football, but you can absolutely see just the growth in Caleb and really the games. Now, he hasn't played well, and that's to be expected. I mean, you can go back and say how many rookie seasons other than Jaden Daniels were just poor. There's a lot. But what he needs to do and what McCoy needs to do and everyone else, they need to get him comfortable. Because let's face it, the new head coach you're bringing in, I think you have to have an offensive mind. Like, I would love to see, and I don't know if this can happen, but I'd love to see like a Joe Brady type guy, like go in there and really, because Cam Ward, I mean, make no mistake about it, he is absolutely the quarterback of the future, in my opinion, based on what I'm seeing on film. You get someone that brings that balance like Joe Brady, and they get a good run game. I think their offensive line has played a little bit better than people have probably thought. And they're not that far away. It's just, here's the deal. If I'm the Titans, you got to figure out what the heck you're doing, because you fire, you hire, you let go of Vrabel, and it's just the ownership and the GM and everyone like that. They just don't know what they want. You have to pick and stick with a guy that you trust that is going to get the best out of Cam Ward.
Real quick here, Chase, we only got about 60 seconds left here. Anybody else right now, again, you're watching all these quarterbacks every week. Anybody we're not talking about enough that you think is playing at a really high level right now?
Well, I mean, look, it's Dak Prescott. And I know we talk about him because he's the Cowboys, but like I just broke him down on my YouTube channel. The dude is not making like any mistakes. Like, I'm not looking at any overthrows. I'm not looking at any misthrows. They're just having to score 40 points to win. Like, the what Dak Prescott is doing right now, not only on the field, like actually doing it and throwing the football, but from a mind game, like he's playing chess out there. When other defenses are playing checkers, he has to be absolutely perfect, because that defense is so bad for them to be in games. And it's just unfortunate, because that offense with Brian Schottenheimer, man, it is rolling. I don't know truly if there's a quarterback right now that's playing better than Dak Prescott.
Fantastic stuff as always, Chase. Again, I love it. See him on ESPN, hear him on Scoop City, see him on, so he's everywhere. And thankfully, he's here with me as well. Chase, thanks a lot, buddy. Appreciate the time.
Thank you.
Chase Daniel, everybody. TJ, yes. TJ over there, his ears were perking up during that Dak Prescott playing better than anybody in the NFL now.
I'm glad Chase said it, because I thought about saying it, but if I say it, I'm going to get torn to shreds, right? But
is Dak an MVP candidate in your mind, TJ?
You know, we were having Cowboys that talk fan earlier. I wanted to say it, but then I'm thinking record-wise, right?
You 2-3-1.
2-3-1, you're not going to win MVQ, which is my, you know, abbreviation for most valuable quarterback, because that's what that award is. It's not most valuable player. Mm-hmm. But like Chase said, when you look at strictly the numbers, man, he's got more yards passing than Baker. He's got more touchdowns, I believe. He does have more interceptions as well. But he's playing incredible. And we don't have CeeDee Lamb. But the defense is awful.
I was told, 50-50. Ooh. He could be back this week for a huge game against the Commanders. George Pickens is going off. If CeeDee could play defense, that'd be even better. Big show tomorrow. Jamie Erdahl's going to be in the studio. Yeah. Ian Rapoport will be here as well. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Thanks for listening to the Rich Eisen Show podcast. You can watch and listen to the Rich Eisen Show live weekdays from noon to 3 Eastern on ESPN Radio, Disney Plus, and on the ESPN app. The Rich Eisen Show, the podcast.